We're near the bottom of Chaf Beis and Beis, beginning the new Mishnah. Mishnah says, "Ha'osa sukkasa b'rosh ha'gala." Somebody makes a sukkah on a wagon. So he now has this mobile sukkah. Or b'rosh ha'svina, or somebody constructs a sukkah precariously at the head of a ship, meaning it's nice and exposed to the wind that could topple it. The Mishnah rules that in spite of the mobility or the precariousness of the sukkah kshera, it's kosher. In the opinion of this Tana, it isn't necessary that the sukkah be of a fixed nature or have a high level of stability. In addition, the Mishnah mentions, v'olala b'yamtiv, the person would be able to enter either of these sukkahs even on the first day of sukkahs, when it's yamtiv, and as opposed to the cases that we will discuss, here there's no issue entering the sukkah on yamtiv. It's not a problem that it's in a wagon or on a ship. Why not go on those things on yamtiv? The Mishnah continues, b'rosh ha'ilan u'agabi gomol. If a person made a sukkah on top of a tree, he made a trio sukkah. Or he made a sukkah on a camel, utilizing the humps as the walls, he brings chach over that. He made that into a sukkah. The Mishnah rules, in these cases, the halacha is, kshera, the sukkah is kosher. It meets the requirements in terms of what the sukkah must be. V'yein olin la b'yamtiv. But there will be a practical problem here in terms of actually fulfilling his mitzvah, at least on the first day of the festival, for he is rabbinically forbidden from going up the tree in a sukkah or going on the camel to use the sukkah. Because as we learn in Masechet Shabbos, the Rabbanan decreed that a person may not make use of either a tree or an animal on Shabbos. The Rabbanan were concerned if he goes up the tree, he might break a branch. If he rides an animal, he might break off a branch to spur the animal. So there will be that practical problem with these sukkahs. The Mishnah now discusses the different permutations of the sukkah where he is, at least to an extent, utilizing the tree to support the sukkah and how it works in terms of at what point we would say that the tree isn't contributing enough to create a problem, meaning that at a certain point we're going to say the tree is not integral to the sukkah and thus going up in the sukkah, if he has some ladder, let's say, to get in the sukkah, doing that won't be considered using the tree, won't be in violation of that rabbinic decree we mentioned. The Mishnah states, Shtayim bi'ilan v'achas bidei adam. If two of the walls of the sukkah are completely supported by the tree, but one of the walls isn't, rather, the third wall is propped up with a structure that it goes all the way to the ground. Oh, shtayim bidei adam v'achas bi'ilan. Or even if two of the three sukkah walls are completely supported by a man-made structure, not by the tree, but if the third wall is supported by the tree, in either of these cases, the halacha is, as we said above, kshera, that while the sukkah itself is kosher, ve'ein olin la b'yamtiv. Practically, he can't go up in there, even if he doesn't have to climb the tree to go up there, even if he has some kind of a ladder, he's rabbinically forbidden to go up there on the first day of sukkahs, on yamtiv. For doing so, it would be considered to be using the tree, since the tree is needed to support the sukkah in these cases. If you would remove the tree, the sukkah would topple. So clearly, a dwelling in the sukkah is considered using the tree, so it would violate the rabbinic decree mentioned above. However, shalosh b'di adam ba'achas b'ilan, if he made a sukkah up there of four walls, and three of the walls are not being supported by the tree whatsoever, he made some kind of structure from the ground to support them. Only one of the walls, the fourth wall, is supported by the tree. Here the halacha is kshera v'olala b'yamtiv. Not only is the sukkah kosher, but he may even go up there. Let's say if he has a ladder, he can't climb the tree in there, but if he has a ladder to go up to the sukkah, he may go up that and use the sukkah even on the first day of sukkahs on yamtiv. Because since if we were to remove the tree entirely, the sukkah would still remain intact, it would be supported. Going up in the sukkah, therefore, isn't considered an act of using the tree, so it doesn't violate the said rabbinic decree. Tinuming techaf gimel amid aleph, the Mishnah says, Zal klal, so this is the underlying principle here. Kol shiyinatel ha'ilan v'yichola lamad b'fnei atzma, as long as if you were to remove the tree, the sukkah would remain standing. Kshei rav on la b'yamtev, halacha would be, you could even go up on the first day of sukkahs on yamtev, and use the sukkah. Where it begins by asking, Mani Masnisin, who is the Tana behind our Mishnah's ruling that a sukkah built at the head of a ship is valid? The Gemara says, Rabbi Akiva, our Mishnah reflects the Tanya Rabbi Akiva, who appears in the following braisa. The Tanya, was Tanya braisa, Osa Sukasa Birosha Svina. So he makes a sukkah at the head of a ship, Rabbi Gamliel Posel. Gamliel invalidates such a sukkah of Rabbi Akiva Mach, Rabbi Akiva says, no, it's fine, it's kosher. And the Raisa relates, Maisa Rabbi Gamliel Rabbi Akiva, Show you Boyin Besvina. Rabbi Gamliel and Rabbi Akiva and Sukkahs were once traveling in a ship. And Amen Rabbi Akiva Va'asa Sukkah Barosha Svina. Rabbi Akiva went, and following his lenient understanding, made a sukkah for himself at the head of the ship, around the deck there. And lo and behold, Lamachar Nashva Ruach Vakrasa. The next day a wind came and blew Rabbi Akiva's sukkah away. Amen Rabbi Gamliel, and when the Sabbath Rabbi Gamliel said to Rabbi Akiva, Akiva Echon Zukoscha, Akiva, where is your sukkah now? Meaning he suggested that this demonstrated that his opinion is correct, that you know, we shouldn't validate such a flimsy sukkah. We're now defines the scope of this dispute. Amar Abaye, Abaye explains, the Kule Alma, all opinions agree, Hecha de'ini yachol alamar baruach mitziya de'abasha lo klumi. If we're talking about a sukkah that's so flimsy, they wouldn't be able to even withstand normal winds that occur on land, that such a sukkah would not be kosher. Even Rabbi Akiva would agree with that. And further, regarding a sukkah that is sturdy enough to withstand usually strong land winds, which is the equivalent of regular sea winds, that definitely is a kosher sukkah. Even Rabbi Gamliel wouldn't have a problem with such a sukkah. Argue about a sukkah which is sturdy enough to withstand normal land winds, but it's not strong enough to withstand unusually strong land winds, which again is the equivalent of the typical kind of wind that occurs at sea. If you would erect such a sukkah on land, of course that'd be fine, but the question is, if that's erected at sea in the ship, is that okay? Rabbi Gamliel Savar, sukkas diras keva ba'inan. Rabbi Gamliel is of the opinion that sukkah must be pretty sturdy. And since the sukkah under discussion isn't very sturdy in the practical sense because it cannot withstand the winds that commonly occur in the circumstances of this sukkah, it therefore doesn't meet the requirement and it's not a kosher sukkah. Whereas Rabbi Akiva Savar, sukkah diras arei bo'inan. Rabbi Akiva is of the opinion that sukkah could be more of a temporary type of dwelling. Since this sukkah, if it would be on land, would hold up fine, you know, fine enough to consider that as at least a temporary dwelling, and therefore it's kosher, even if it's currently in an environment where there's a high likelihood that it will get blown down. Which is stated, if somebody made a sukkah on a camel, that would be kosher. Gemara says, Masti Samani, who is the author of this ruling of the Mishnah of Imeir, he. This is from the Tanya of Imeir that we find in Ebraisa, the Tanya, it says in Ebraisa, Osa Sukasa Gabi Behema. Somebody makes his sukkah on an animal, Rabbi Meir Machshir. Rabbi Meir says, that's okay, it's a kosher sukkah. Rabbi Yehuda Posel. Rabbi Yehuda invalidates it. He says, no, that's not a kosher sukkah. The Gemara asks, my time with Rabbi Yehuda. What is Rabbi Yehuda's basis for invalidating such a sukkah? He explains on Rekra, his source is, the Pasuk states, Chag HaSukkos Tase Lecha Shivas Yamim. It says, the festival of Sukkos you should make for yourself for 7 days. The Pasuk's language implies, Sukkah Haruya L'Shiva Shema Sukkah. Only a Sukkah that is fit for the purpose of fulfilling the mitzvah for all 7 days of the festival can be considered a valid Sukkah. Sukkah She'en Haruya L'Shiva Lo Shema Sukkah. But if somebody makes a Sukkah that's not fit, the person to fulfill the mitzvah of living in the sukkah for all 7 days of the holiday, that cannot be considered a valid sukkah. And thus, Rabbi Yehuda disqualifies a sukkah that a person sets up on his animal, because the fact is, he won't be able to use that on day one, which is Yom Tov, because as the Mishnah stated, you're not allowed to use a sukkah on an animal on Yom Tov, because it's rabbinically forbidden to go on an animal on Yom Tov. The Gemara explains how Rabbi Meir would respond to this. Rabbi Meir would respond that I agree that the Pasuk says that the only sukkah which is fit to fulfill the mitzvah for all 7 days can be valid. Rabbi Meir argues, Hanami midyaraisa mechsechazia. On the biblical level, sukkah made on an animal is fit to fulfill the mitzvah for all 7 days. From the Torah level, it doesn't say there's any prohibition in going on an animal on Shabbos. It doesn't violate any particular malacha. It's okay to do that on Shabbos or Yom Tov. Rabbanan hu degazer ba. Just the Rabbanan made a decree saying that you can't go on an animal on Shabbos or Yom Tov. But being that we're dealing with the biblical question of whether this is a valid sukkah, Rabbi Meir argues that the fact that there's a rabbinic prohibition not to use this sukkah for one of the days of sukkahs doesn't contravene this requirement that it be a sukkah that's fit to use for the mitzvah for all 7 days. Rabbi Yehuda argues, though, that no, since practically you can't use the sukkah, it doesn't matter that it's because of a rabbinic decree, it does not comply with the requirement. The Gemara brings a brisa which presents a related dispute to Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yehuda. Brisa says, Asa lebehema dofen l'sukkah. See, somebody used an animal as one of the walls of his sukkah, as one of the partitions. Rabbi Meir posel. Rabbi Meir invalidates such a sukkah. Rabbi Yehuda machsher. Rabbi Yehuda validates such a sukkah. The brisa explains, Shehaya Rabbi Meir omer. For Rabbi Meir would say, Kol davar sheyesh bo ruach chayim, any living creature, ein osin oso lo dofen l'sukkah, you can't use that. Not as one of the walls of the sukkah, velo lechi l'mavoy, nor as the required side post you have to install at the entrance to mavoy, as we discussed yesterday, to permit carrying there on the rabbinic level. You can't use a live creature for that, velo pasin l'miros, nor to supply the L-shaped partitions that the Rabbanan validate for the purpose of enclosing the area where the well is as a private domain so that the pilgrims are able to draw water from there on Shabbos, being the Rabbanan issued a leniency that even though normally we only consider place a private domain with proper partitions surrounding the whole thing, but the Rabbanan said for the sake of the pilgrims so that they'd be able to draw water, you could put L-shaped posts at the corners, and that's good enough. So Meir says you can't use a live creature to supply those posts at the corners. Below gola lekever, nor would a live creature which covers a coffin be classified as a coffin cover that has special, strict laws of tumah. I mean, normally the coffin cover is a source in and of itself of tumah, but if the cover is a live creature, that doesn't apply. And Mishum Rabbi Yossi Glili Amru, Af in Kosvin Alav Gitei Nashim. Yossi Glili adds, another, he says, we also can't write the formula for a divorce document on a live creature. That wouldn't be considered a valid get. The Gemara asks, my time in the Remeir, what is the Remeir's basis for disqualifying a live creature as one of the partitions of the Sukkah, or being a Lechiv in Mavoy, or passing for Biros? Why can't a live creature contribute to halachically enclosing some area? Represents different opinions. Abai Omar, Abai said, Shamit Thomas. Meir's concern is that maybe the animal will die sometime in Yom Tov, and then there goes our partition, there goes our sukkah. Thus, Meir rules that, practically speaking, that we can't use a live creature for one of the partitions. The world will later address the question of why Meir says we don't consider a live creature as a coffin cover with respect to Tuma. A different theory of Rizera, Amar Shema Tivrach. Rizera says, Rabbi Meir's concern is not that the animal will die, but that it will run away. So there goes your sukkah wall, or your mavoy, or your well enclosure. The Gemara identifies a case where the halacha will depend on which explanation you go with the bias or Rizera's. The Gemara says, Bepil Kashur, let's say we have a bound up elephant that's serving as the partition. Kuliamalo Pligi, the bias and Rizera would agree that the Rimer would not have a problem with counting that as one of the sukkah partitions. First of all, if we go with Abaye's explanation, there's no issue here. The Inami Mayas, for even should the elephant die in the middle of sukkahs, not a problem. Yesh bin Ivlasu Yud, surely, even once the elephant carcass hits the ground, crumbles and dies, will still meet the required height of 10 tefachim. Clearly, if we go with the Rizera's explanation, it might run away. That doesn't apply because it's tied up. Ki pligi, in what case would Abai and Rizera argue about what Rimer would hold? Vipil she'eno kashur. They would argue about, let's say, we're using an elephant for the partition, which isn't tied down. Lamadiyam Rishamit Thomas lo chayshinan. If we go with Abai's explanation, the only concern is that it might die. That isn't the problem here, as we explained above. Lamadiyam Rishamitivra chayshinan. Which, according to Rizera, who is concerned that the animal might run away, well, that is a problem here because it isn't tied down. The Gemara wonders, why wouldn't Abaye share Rizera's concern that this partition isn't reliable because the animal might run away at any moment? I mean, if Abaye says Rizera is worried about even the relatively remote possibility that it'll die on one of the days of Yom Tov, then surely Rimer should be worried that maybe the animal will run away if it's not tied down. The Gemara concedes to this and says, "Ela b'pil she'enu kosher kuli amar lo pligi." You're right. When Abaye says that Rimer is worried the animal might die, it doesn't mean that that's his only concern. But surely he'd be worried if the animal wasn't tied down for the possibility that it might run away. So in such a case, if we're dealing with an elephant that is not tied down, everybody, even Abaye, would agree that there would not be a reliable partition. Rimer would not allow that, because maybe it'll run away. Ki pligi b'behema kshura. Now, the Rabbi and Rabbi Zeir would argue about the halach in the case of a smaller animal, not an elephant, regular-sized animal, that is tied down. L'man d'yomer gzeir shamitamos chayshina. According to Abaye's understanding, this would not be a reliable partition, because maybe it'll die when it crumples to the ground. We would no longer have the required height of 10 tefachim. That constitutes a partition. Whereas the Madi Amr Gzeira Shema Tivrach Lo Chayshinan. The Rizera's understanding, you know, we're not worried that it might die. The only concern is it might run away. Well, here, where it's tied down, we needn't be concerned for that. So Rizera would say that in this case, Rimer would not have an issue. But the Gemara now asks, the Madi Amr Gzeira Shema Tivrach Necho Shema Tamas. Why doesn't Rizera share Abaye's concern that the animal might die and then it wouldn't be a partition anymore, as we explained? The Gemara answers that Rizera argues a misa lo shchicha. The possibility the animal will die the next few days over Yom Tov is just not very likely. So we need not be concerned for that. The Gemara now asks a question on the entire notion of using an animal as a partition. How could that count as a partition? Ve'ikar ravcha de beni beni. When, of course, the animal is not just like one solid wall. There's the space between its legs, so that should constitute a breach in the partition, which should undermine it. Gemara answers, the avilei behutza v'dafna. The rice is referring to where he filled in that gap between the animal's legs with, some, let's say, palm or bay trees. Gemara points out another issue, v'dilma rava. What if the possibility that the animal will crouch and go below 10 tfachim? Gemara answers, indeed, that would be a problem, but the case is the mesicha ba'ashle mile'el. The Bryce is referring to where the animal is tied up from ropes or from above, which prevent it from being able to crouch. But once we're saying this, so this creates the following problem, which is l'man d'yomer gzeira shema tamas nami. Now let's go back to Abaye's understanding that the concern is that maybe the animal will die. And why would that be a problem? Because we said, and then it will go to the ground, be less than 10 tefachim. But one second, you just said that ha-mesicha ba'ashli mila'el. We have to be talking about a case where it's being propped up with ropes from above. So now, what would be the problem if the animal died? It'll still maintain that height of 10 tefachim. More answers. Zimnin demukim bepachos bishloshes samach l'schach. You could have a case where the height of the animal, as it stands up or propped up with these ropes, is just barely crosses the threshold, meaning in theory he could have this animal, which only has a height of 7 tefachim, plus a little bit, so the top of the animal is barely within 3 tefachim of this schach. Of course, that puts it within the range of lavud, which allows us to view the gap as if it's filled in, so that technically that would be a kosher partition. You fill in the gaps, and now you just meet the minimum of 10 tefachim. The issue is, turning to Abaye, v'kiv in the ma'isa kavtsa v'lava daite. According to Abaye's understanding of Rimeir, there is the possibility that the animal will die, and upon death, the animal will shrink somewhat to the point that now the gap between the top of the animal and the schach is 3 tefachim or more, and thus would no longer be a valid partition. And this change, because it's such a small change, could easily go unnoticed by the person. And so unbeknownst to him, he would be living in a sukkah on the holiday that isn't valid. So Rimer says, because of this possibility, just don't use a live animal for one of the partitions of the sukkah. According to Abaye, then, the dispute of Rimer and Rabbi Yehuda regarding the permissibility of using a live creature as one of the sukkah partitions comes down to the dispute between these Tanayim But do we have to be concerned for the possibility that the animal will die? Rabbi Meir is concerned for that possibility. Rabbi Yehuda isn't. The Gemara asks, "Umi Amar Abayi Rabbi Meir Chayish Lemisa Rabbi Yehuda Lo Chayish." But is this really Abayi's understanding that, according to Rabbi Meir, we are concerned for the imminent possibility of death, and Rabbi Yehuda isn't concerned for that? V'atanan, but now in a discussion of a different Mishnah, Abayi appears to say the opposite. This is a Mishnah Masechtas Gittin. Mishnah there states, "Bas Yisrael Shenises LeKohen." If you have a Bas Yisrael who marries a Kohen, and so of course that grants her the privilege to eat Truma. Her husband went away overseas. The halacha is, "Ocheles b'truma v'cheska shukayim." She may continue to eat the Truma on the assumption that her husband is still alive. Even if he went on some ship away on some faraway journey, and there's of course the risk, a possibility, that maybe he passed away, and we just don't know, especially in earlier times when they didn't have advanced systems of communication. Nevertheless, the halacha is, she could rely on chazaka, specifically that she could assume, you know, since her husband was alive when he departed, he's still alive, and on that assumption, she could continue to eat truma. Now, Ramin and Allah, in the Gemara in Gittin, we point to a braisa that appears to contradict the Mishnah. The braisa states that if a husband handed his wife a get and said, "Harei zegidech sho'achas kodem misasi," this divorce should go into effect one moment before my death. This is something that would be done, for example, if a husband was going to some dangerous situation, he was worried he might pass away, he would not want his wife to deal with the problem of yibum, meaning that if he has a brother, let's say that brother is very young, still a baby, if he would get killed in battle, for instance, and if they didn't have children, the widow would be tied down. She would have to wait for the brother for him to either do yibum or chalitza. So sometimes, basically, it's halachically advantageous to set up this arrangement where if it turns out he would pass away, she would be divorced a moment before death. The Braisa rules, "Asura lechol betruma miyad." Immediately going forward, she may not partake of truma anymore. Why? Because perhaps at any moment, the husband will die. And if that should happen, well, based on the arrangement they made, she will have been divorced from him retroactively a moment before. And so if she was eating a truma a moment before death, it would emerge that she violated the prohibition that says that if a person doesn't have a specific right to eat truma, such as being married to a Kohen, it's strictly forbidden to eat the truma. So the Braisa appears to contradict the Mishnah, for the Braisa apparently assumes that when we have a question that maybe, you know, at any given moment a person might die, we have to be stringent on that issue. If the implication of that, if the possibility of death implies some kind of a prohibition, then we have to be stringent to be concerned for that possibility. In other words, apparently the Braisa doesn't work with the Mishnah's Chazaka that says that if it's a situation where we don't know, we could assume that the person is alive. V'yomer Abayi, and Abayi there answers by explaining Lo Kasha. There's no contradiction. For the answer is, Ha Rabbi Meir, the Lo Chayish Lemisa. The Mishnah is authored by Rabbi Meir, who isn't concerned for the possibility that the person will die. The Meir goes with Chazaka, whereas Ha Rabbi Yehuda the Chayish Lemisa. The Braisa is authored by Rabbi Yehuda, who is concerned for the possibility of death, who says the Halacha requires us to be stringent for that possibility. And how do I know that these Tanayim hold these views? It says, D'Tanya, can prove this from a Braisa. Braisa says, Elokech Yayin Mibein HaKusim. Somebody purchases wine from a Kusi person. The point is, this is an individual we cannot assume took care of all of the tithing requirements. Now the problem is, he, let's say, purchased this wine very close to Shabbos. There's a little time. He doesn't have the time to physically separate the tithing portions, the truma and the miser. Well, then he may do as follows. Omer, he declares, Shnei lugin she'ani osid lahafresh, the two lug out of this 100 lug of wine. It will eventually be physically separated. Rehein truma shall hereby now be designated as the truma portion. And Asara Maiser Rishon, 10 lug, shall be designated as Maiser Rishon. That goes to the Levi, Tisha Maiser Sheni, and then the 10% of it remains. The 9 lug is hereby designated as Maiser Sheni. So that's the portion that has to be taken and eaten in Yerushalayim. Umeichel, he should then transfer that Maaser Sheni sanctity onto something else of value. So yeah, he might as well, if he can, you know, physically remove at least a part of the sanctified status of one of the tithing parts, so let him do so. So he has that option in the case of Maaser Sheni, so he should do that. In any case, the Braisa says, Vishosim Yad, upon making this declaration, he will be able to enjoy the wine immediately. Like, he can have it on Shabbos, use it for Kiddush. He just has to make sure that he leaves the amount to equal at least to the tithing amounts. And once he has that remaining portion of wine, we say retroactively through an idea called Breira, that this now reveals to us that this remaining portion corresponds with the tithing portions that he had designated initially. Like, even though, of course, when there's still a full barrel of wine, we can't identify where's the truma portion, where's the chulin portion. We couldn't identify that. But we sort it out later. Once we're left with an amount corresponding to the tithing portion, we say, okay, now we say all along this was the portion that had been designated. And so the practical result is that he will be able to enjoy the wine. The wine he drinks will be the tithed portion, and whatever remains, just to make sure to leave enough, that will be the actual portions that have to go to the Kohen, to the Levi, respectively. Divrei Rabbi Meir, these are the words of Rabbi Meir. Tinamik dechavdal. However, Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Shimon, Osrin. The Tanaim, Rabbi Yehuda, and Rabbi Yossi, and Rabbi Shimon, prohibit this practice, for they are concerned for the possibility that the wineskin he uses will split, and maybe the wine will all spill. And that, of course, would be a disaster, because then the whole basis for the dispensation that we spoke about could not be utilized. The whole thing works only based on the fact that, okay, he leaves enough corresponding to the tithing portions, and then we could potentially, you know, sort it out through Breira. But what if the wine all spills? Well, that would ruin everything. And the wine that he had drunk beforehand, it would emerge, we would have to say that that wine possibly was the tithe portion. And the person will have transgressed a serious prohibition. So these Tanaim forbid this solution. So Bai argues that, okay, we see Rabbi Yehuda is concerned that maybe the wineskin will split. Now that is a possibility that's even more remote than the possibility that at any moment, any day, a person might die. So Bai concludes, okay, we see that Rabbi Yehuda is the one who authored the Braisa, which is a concern that maybe at any moment the person will die. And Abai argues that just as Rabbi Meir in this Braisa isn't concerned that maybe the wineskin will split and it will all spill, Rabbi Meir is likewise not concerned that the person might die. And so Abai uses this dispute of Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yehuda to reconcile the Mishnah and Braisa in getting there. But the problem is, this is exactly the opposite of how Abai explains the dispute of Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yehuda of the Braisa here, regarding using a living creature for one of the walls of the Sukkah. For here, Abai is suggesting that Rabbi Meir is the one who is worried that the animal might die, whereas Rabbi Yehuda isn't worried about that. The Gemara answers, Epach, must it reverse Abai's explanation there in Gittin. Really what Abai said there is that Rabbi Meir, Chayesh Lemisa, Rabbi Meir is the author of the Braisa, which is concerned that maybe at any moment the Kohen who gave his wife that conditional divorce will die. Rabbi Yehuda lo chayesh lemisa, whereas Rabbi Yehuda authored the Mishnah, which says that we're not required to be concerned that at any moment the Kohen husband will die. Now, what basis do I say that these Tanaim hold these views? Titanya. Well, we can glean that from the Braisa of here in Sukkah. Right, it says, Asa levei medof in the Sukkah, Rabbi Meir, posa Rabbi Yehuda machshir. Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yehuda disagree as to whether we could use a living creature for one of the Sukkah walls. And Meir says, you can't. Why? Because he's worried it might die. But Rabbi Yehuda says, not a problem, for we don't have to be worried that the animal might die. But this leaves the question of Kasha the Rabbi Meir, the Rabbi Meir. If we're now saying that Rabbi Meir, here in Sukkah and in Gittin, is not worried about something like the animal dying, that appears to contradict Rabbi Meir's opinion in the wine case. For there, Rabbi Meir takes the position that we don't have to be worried for the possibility that the wineskin will split. And seemingly, you know, that's a similar kind of a possibility to the possibility of death, so it seems like a contradiction. But the Gemara answer is, Amar lach Rabbi Meir, Misa shchicha, b'kiyasa not lo shchicha. the possibility that the animal, the person, could die any day is a relatively common thing, whereas the possibility the wineskin was split open, that would be a pretty freakish occurrence. For Efshar, the Mussar, the Shomer, give it to somebody to watch. In other words, what are the chances that the wineskin was split open? It's very unlikely. So Rabbi Meir is not concerned for that. So we're now, points out, Kasha, the Yehuda, the Yehuda. But we seem to have a contradiction in the opinions of Rabbi Yehuda. For if we're now saying that Rabbi Yehuda isn't even concerned for the relatively common possibility that the animal, the person, might die, then why does he, in the case of the wine there, apparently say that we do have to be worried that the wineskin was split open? The Gemara answers, Taima de Rabbi Yehuda lav mishum dechayesh lebikias noda lemishum deles lebreira. Yehuda's real reason for forbidding that solution of doing the verbal declaration isn't that he's actually worried that the wineskin will split open, but that he has a fundamental disagreement with Rabbi Meir regarding the halachic principle that Rabbi Meir's solution relies on called breira. Breira says, again, we could sort it out later. We don't know, while he's drinking the wine, which part of the wine is the chulin, a permitted part, and which part is the truma meiser part. But Breira says, that's okay. Once we're left with the remaining portion that he's not drinking later, we could say retroactively that that was the truma meiser part all along. Rabbi Yehuda simply disagrees that we're able to say such a thing. He says, no, we don't say breira. And so, of course, this solution is not acceptable. But the Gemara objects, V'lo chai shavida lebikias nod? Can you really suggest that Rabbi Yehuda is not concerned for the wineskin splitting? But Aiva miniktani seifa. But let's take a look at the continuing language of the Braisa there. It says, Amrlo the Rabbi Meir, the Tanaim Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Yosef, Rabbi Shimon, said to Rabbi Meir, are you not concerned that maybe the wineskin will split? And it would then emerge that he was drinking untied wine. The whole thing is ruined. The whole declaration would be retroactively invalid. So actually all of the wine would be considered tevel, untied. And of course it's strictly forbidden to drink untied food. We may sit back to them. When that happens, I'll worry about it. In other words, this is not something that we're required to be concerned for, because it's just not very likely. But the Gemara points out, Mechlal, Dechayish, Rabbi Yehuda, Lebikias, Anod. Does this not imply that Rabbi Yehuda and company are concerned the wineskin will split? So how could you suggest that Rabbi Yehuda isn't really worried about that? The Gemara answers, Hasam, Rabbi Yehuda, Dekaomer, Rabbi Meir. Rabbi Yehuda there is saying that Rabbi Meir should agree that the possibility the wineskin will split should be of concern. That is, Buda there in effect says, Lidi di Leslie Breira. In my own opinion, this solution definitely doesn't work because I reject the idea of Breira. And so you can't drink the wine now and sort out later which was the Truma part, which was the Chulin part. Lidi dach di Yesh Breira. But according to your understanding, that we could use this concept of Breira. Isn't there another problem with your solution, namely the possibility that the wineskin was split open? And meaning, the same way that we know you are Rimer concerned that a person might any day die, you say that you can't rely on chazaka, the halacha requires us to be worried about that. Shouldn't you be likewise concerned that maybe the wineskin will split and ruin this whole plan, and it would emerge that he drank tevel amafreya? To this, Rabbi Meir responds, when that happens, I'll worry about it. That is, the possibility that the wineskin will split open is even less likely than the possibility of an apparently healthy person passing away. The Gemara questions, V'lo chayesh Rabbi Yehuda lemisa. Really, Rabbi Yehuda is not concerned if a person's imminent death, V'ha tinan. I learned in the first mission of Masechtas Yuma, Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Af isha acheres maskina lo shemetamas ishto. Rabbi Yehuda in the mission there teaches that we have to prepare a second wife for the Kohen Gadol before he performs the Yom Kippur service, lest his current wife pass away, which would disqualify the Kohen Gadol from the service. He must be married to conduct the Yom Kippur service. So apparently Rabbi Yehuda is worried that a person who otherwise looks healthy might pass away at any moment. The halacha requires us to be concerned for that possibility. The Gemara answers, Ha'itmar alam rafuna b'reid of Yeshua. It was stated regarding that opinion of Rabbi Yehuda of that Mishnah that that doesn't reflect basic halacha, rather mala suba kapara. That's a special decree of the Rabbanan. The Rabbanan imposed this higher standard to be concerned for the possibility, however remote, that maybe on Yom Kippur, the Kohen Gadol's wife will pass away, to make certain that everything will be done correctly for the Avodah of Yom Kippur. The Gemara asks a question that applies to both Abai and Rabbi Zeir's understanding of Rabbi Meir's opinion of why you can't use a living creature as a sukkah wall. The Gemara points out, Bein Laman Diyomer Shemet Thomas, whether we're working with Abai's understanding, Rabbi Meir disqualifies living creature as a sukkah wall because it might die. Bein Laman Diyomer Shemet Tivrach, whether we're working with Rabbi Zeir's understanding, that the concern is the animal might run away. Either case, and both of these Amoraim clearly understand that midya raisa mechitza ma'al yehi. On the biblical level, a living animal can serve as a partition for, let's say, a sukkah. For Rabbanan u'degazru ba, it's just a rabbinic thing. The Rabbanan made a decree that because we're concerned for one of these possibilities, we can't practically use a living animal as a partition. The Gemara now asks, Elamiata, Rabbi Meir titam mishum golel. But if that's so, why doesn't Rabbi Meir consider a living creature that is functioning as a cover of a coffin as a source of tumah, as coffin covers normally are? So why does Rabbi Meir and the Braisa say that, no, it's not considered source of tumah? And further, Elamitnan, why do we learn in the Mishnah in Erevin? Says there as well, Rehuda mitam mishum golel. Rehuda says that an animal would have the tumah of a coffin cover, but Rabbi Meir mitar. Rabbi Meir says no, it wouldn't be a source of tumah under the halach of golel. Because of this question, the Gemara suggests a whole new approach for understanding Rabbi Meir's opinion. That is, Elam Ravacha bar Yaakov kisaver Rabbi Meir kol mechitza sheomedes beruach ena mechitza. Anything which only stands up because of breath cannot be deemed a halachically valid partition. The partition here only stands up because of an intangible, because of its breath of life. So when that's the case, it cannot be deemed a valid partition. Ikadi Amri, others report a different version of Rav Acha bar Yaakov's explanation. Amar Rav Acha bar Yaakov kesav Rabbi Meir kol mechitza she'ina asuya bidei adam ena mechitza. This version, the way he explains it is, in Rabbi Meir's opinion, something that stands up through a force that could not possibly be created by man, namely, in this case, it is the life force of the animal which keeps it standing up. It's nefesh, so a man can't create a nefesh. And therefore, it cannot be considered a partition. That doesn't mean if you have, let's say, a naturally formed partition from rocks, you know, natural barrier, that wouldn't be a partition. No, it certainly would. What we're saying is that if you're dealing with a special case where a man could not possibly replicate such a thing, a man cannot create a nefesh, and that's what's keeping this animal up, that cannot be considered a valid partition. That's Rabbi Meir's reason. So whichever version of the reason we go with, this is an explanation that will apply to the coffin cover issue as well. Because now we're saying that on the biblical level, you can't consider a living animal as a halachic kind of, you know, structure, whether it's a partition or the cover of an aron, if it stands up through wind, through breath, or it stands up based on something that a man could not possibly create. Now, it might be Nayu. What would be a case where we would see a difference between these two versions? The Gemara says it could be Nayu de Ukma beno tafuach. Well, imagine a case where he tries to make a partition with an inflated wineskin. You know, takes, let's say, a balloon or something, inflates something, and that serves as the wall. If you're your moonwalk sukkah, the halach in this case would depend on which version of Rav Acha bar Yaakov we go with. According to the first version, that if the thing stands up with the wind, with breath, it's not a valid mechitza, that applies to this case. It's inflated, it stands up through air, so it's not valid, whereas according to the second version, though, that it's only a problem if it's not something that can possibly be accomplished by men, well, turning to the base, Harei Asuya Bidei Adam. In this case, it was actually made by man, and therefore, according to the second version, the moonwalk sukkah would be perfectly fine.
You've been listening to RealClearDaf.com. Visit us online for resources or to dedicate a shiur. To speak with Rabbi Wise, call 855-ASK-RCD-1. That's 855-275-7231.